What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn. It is a 512 Friday edition of Ball Don't Lie. What's up, my man? Patrick plays jams from local bands and artists that you can catch live right here in the ATX. Who are we jamming right now, Patrick?
This is Donovan Keith, and he is playing Saturday at Central Machine Works.
Oh, I like that. There you go. If you missed any of the selections for 512 Friday, please go over to hornfm.com. My man Patrick hooks you up there as well in case you missed any of them. You can go catch up with them right there at hornfm.com. We're on the road. We're hanging out at Golffinity celebrating Dale Match Play, which is happening here in the ATX. A lot going on in the ATX this weekend, but Dale Match Play, one of the biggest events. So they are having a party out here at Golffinity celebrating Dale Match Play. So come on out here and join the party as well. They got Dale Match Play menu items, Dale Match Play cocktails for you as well. You can come out here and enjoy that. And Harge and I will be out here till 7 o'clock. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so via Twitter. Harge is at HardballHarge. In the Twitterverse. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse, and my man Patrick Davis said it's Patrick Davis. Of course, in this segment, talking a lot about Texas versus Xavier. We'll break down that matchup. We'll probably continue to break it down all the way throughout the rest of the show. And Rod's round of the day, we'll take a little break. We'll get into some Dallas Cowboys discussion. I was inspired by one of my favorite all-time sitcoms with a theory as to what is happening with the Dallas Cowboys offseason. Huh. So we'll talk about that when we get into Raj's rant of the day. All right, let's start with Texas Xavier here, Harge, because, you know, a lot of Longhorn fans a little nervous about this, and honestly, you are making some folks nervous.
Because not trying to.
You ain't trying to, but you're just keeping it real, and you said even before this matchup actually was finalized, prior to talking about filling out brackets,
yep,
you would not have wanted to meet up with Xavier.
No.
When they actually announced, you know, the pods and all that brackets, one of the matchups you did not want to see was Texas Xavier. Now, how do you feel about it now? Are you still anxious about this matchup?
I'm having a little bit of anxiety.
So you're not confident?
No, it's not necessarily that I'm not confident. I just know.
Is it a bad matchup for Texas in your opinion?
It has its moments.
It could be. Okay.
Depending on how Texas goes about their business and what we've seen over the last couple games, they're playing some solid basketball. They're sharing the ball a lot better than what it was at certain points this year. We're having different guys step up in these situations. But initially, when I was looking at it and filling out the brackets, the one thing that I always kept looking at was the athleticism, right? Mm-hmm. They're aggressive play. Now, if the refs are going to let both of these teams go at it.
Which they have been in the tournament. They've been letting them play in the tournament, man.
I still look at Texas as that team that could walk away with this victory. Do I think it's going to be a lot closer than most people expect? Texas right now is a 4.5-point favorite. I think it's a little tight. I think it's a tight basketball game just because of what we saw last night. Look at the two games that we got a chance to see. The only bad game was the Arkansas game.
I know, and I meant to ask Aaron about the Zags.
Yeah.
Because I assume he's a Zags fan. Yeah, because he's from the Washington area,
right?
Everybody from that area is a Zags. My wife lived in Idaho, and she's a Zags fan.
Hey, because they're good.
Everybody in the region is a Zags
fan. They don't ever talk about their baseball team. They don't ever talk about track. They always talk about their hoops team. And they all represent for that hoops team. So – after watching all the games that were played last night, taking aside the UConn-Arkansas game, you look at how the Big 12 and how it fared, right? And you look at what Texas has done with those teams. They played well against all those teams, got a good record, and you continue to try to hope that they break it down to where Texas is going to be in this situation where it's all favorable for them. But it all depends on what the referees are going to be doing for them as well.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. There are a couple of factors that I think are advantageous to Texas in this matchup. Mm-hmm. First of all, the depth of Texas.
Yep.
They're just deep. Texas plays nine guys on the regular. Xavier, they actually now their rotation is probably down to just seven players. They recently had that injury. They were a little bit deeper. They had an injury to one of their big men, Zach Fremantle, I believe is his name. Since he went down, they've shortened the rotation even more. And I think Texas can wear down Xavier throughout the course of a game because they are so deep. But they won't have every guy that they're having their rotation is not necessarily gonna be at a having matchup advantage
right
in this game versus Xavier. So yes, they are nine deep, but not necessarily all nine of those guys are gonna be impact players in this specific game. But Xavier's bench has combined to play a little under 25%, less than 25% of their total minutes this season. So yeah, they've always been a team that has relied on a short rotation. They don't have a lot of depth. Texas has a ton of depth, one of the best benches in the country. And, of course, it's mostly because Sir Jabari Rice coming off that bench is a beast.
Right.
But you pointed out, and I love that point that you made, that you think Brock Cunningham coming off the bench is going to be huge in this game. He's kind of your X factor in this matchup.
He's definitely my X factor just because of the hustle and the way and the physicality in which he plays. And you saw that he didn't get a chance to play that much in the last game, and I think that was a matchup.
It's a matchup thing, yeah.
And this one, he fits.
Yeah, because that was guards. Yeah, out of Penn State.
Exactly. They had a lot of guard play. Small ball. And keeping him out on the perimeter is something that he's not really good at this point. But if you're going to go out there and you're going to be physical and you're going to bang and you're going to have that guy that's going to be able to attack for the loose balls and be able to, you know, muck it up, so to speak, mm-hmm. he's definitely going to be that guy. And let's not forget, he can knock down threes in those situations where people start falling off of him. He gets to a certain spot, and you know he's going to take that shot.
I'm glad you said certain spot. His top of the key.
Money.
He is.
Money.
He's shooting like close to 46%
money
from the top of that key.
Yeah.
And if he just a little, if you just, you know, if he goes like a little
nudges
bit,
him a little bit away,
nudge to his right, it's still around 47%.
Yep.
So, yeah, you're right about that, though. He finds his spot. He can be really, really dangerous.
That's an extension of the free throw line to me, the top of the key. You know, if you can shoot free throws, you can definitely shoot from the top of the key.
But just because of the angle of it?
Because of the angle of it.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Right, and that's one thing, top of the key, you know if it's off.
So exactly.
As soon as you leave there, you're like, oh, that ain't.
I'm going to the right. I'm going to the right.
Everybody knows that top of the key shot, you're like, oh, that's off.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes you can't tell from that angle, nope. But yeah, but that top of the key,
you know.
You know.
Immediately.
But one of the things also that I think Texas has an advantage of in this matchup, and just doing kind of, you know, the kind of surface level breakdown on Xavier, they have struggled versus opposing centers. They've kind of benefited from facing teams that do not really rely significantly on their centers for scoring. And Texas wasn't actually that reliant on centers for scoring up until Dylan Dessou, kind of an undersized center, started to, you know, have the flotation station, the push shot, whatever it is. Xavier faced Pitt, remember, and Panthers center, Diaz Graham.
Yep.
He had one of his highest scoring games of the season. And when they faced Creighton, the Creighton center, Ryan Kalbrenner, led his team with 18 points, converted all of his field goal attempts, and was responsible for literally a third of his team scoring. If you go look at Dylan Dessou right now, is trending in the right direction. That is a weakness defensively for them, is centers that can score. And right now, Texas has one of the hottest scoring centers in the country.
Yeah.
With the way Dylan Dessou has been playing at least the last eight games or so. So that actually could be a huge advantage just considering the matchup right now.
In the Xavier game against Pittsburgh, they had seven guys in double digits too. So think about that. If they come out and they have that balanced scoring like they did against Pittsburgh, and this is the biggest thing for me when it comes to Texas, their defense is underrated. And how you said it earlier, what is the number, 72? If they
basically
keep a team under
Texas is 23-0 when they hold teams to 72 points or fewer.
Right.
Xavier is 27-3 when they score 72 or more points. So 72 is your
magic number tonight.
If Xavier gets over 72, It ain't good.
Right.
If Texas defense, right now Texas defense is allowing only 58 points per game.
Yes.
Since March 1st.
Yep.
So ever since they gave up 75 yard
touchdown run.
Either way, it's bad.
Yeah. Exactly.
75 point game to TCU, and they lost that game. They have really become a juggernaut on the defensive side. So I do think that defense, that's their calling card. That defense is going to come to play. And Penn State and Colgate, both prolific three-point shooting teams. I mean, they were combined 11 of 41 from three-point range against Texas. And once again, another team that can shoot it from three-point range. The thing that worries me about Xavier is they got a big man that can shoot the three.
Yeah, they stretch you out.
Yeah, they stretch you out. Is it Nungy?
Yeah.
He shoots over 40% from three-point range. And so he's a guy that can hurt you down low. He's a seven-footer, too, so he's legit.
Yep.
And can play both ends of the floor. Nungy can be a – because that is a natural – not natural, but it's a roster limitation for Texas. It has been one of the Achilles heels for this team all season long. They have a versatile big man that can spread the
Adam Kunkel was the one who was hitting the shots, number five last game for them, for Xavier. He went 5 of 8. From three-point land, and he made 5 of the 8 three-pointers that they made. So that's the other part of it too. But again, they had 7 guys in double digits.
That's
the one thing that I keep looking at. Oh. If you can control, if you can just get 4 guys in double digits, I'm cool with it. But when you got 7 guys in double digits, that goes to your point. That's going to put you to 70.
That's everybody in their rotation.
That puts you to 70, too. Yeah. That puts you to 70.
Yeah, I just told you, they have a short rotation.
Yes.
That's everybody in the rotation scoring double digits. I'm with you. And I think you start with, Sully Boom.
Yep.
All right, start with Sully Boom, and he's – love the name. It's a great name. But he's also shooting close to 40% from three-point range.
Yep.
And he's the leading scorer. That's the bad news. The good news is Rodney Terry knows Sully Boom's game as well as any coach in the country.
Yep.
Because he was a coach of Sully Boom at UTEP for a couple of years after he transferred from San Fran and before he decided to transfer to Xavier. So Texas is really good at pinpointing most important or lethal threats on the opposing team and neutralizing them. They've done a really good job of that. And hopefully we see another tactical game plan that is designed to take away a team's most important offensive asset, which right now it's Sully Boom for Xavier.
Yeah, make him an assist
I went the whole show without saying Xavier, and now I finally did it.
I was trying to help you out, and just keep going.
I know.
Trying to jump over it. But, yeah, you're absolutely right, and that's something, too. If you can make him an assist guy and not a scoring guy, that's going to help you a long way. But he's so quick. He's so quick. I'm just trying to figure out who the matchups are going to be, who's going to cover who, who's going to make it difficult for the next man. And if they can get everybody lined up and in the right position, Texas's defense, you brought the numbers up. They've been playing very, very well on the defensive end.
Him and Kobe Jones.
Yeah.
Kobe Jones is the other guard who also is – both those guys can penetrate and get to the rim.
And they play a lot of minutes too.
Oh, like I said,
like you said, they're short bench.
That's all they have.
They have a lot that plays.
They can break down the defense
really
well, both of those guys. And that's what they'll be trying to do against Texas, break down that defense and either drive and kick it or get to the rim, create some contact, and try to even get Texas in foul trouble. That goes back to what Horace talked about too, how the ref's going to call the game. It's going to be big.
Yeah.
It's going to be huge. They're going to let them play, let them get physical, or they're going to call it close. And if they do that, then it could really change the dynamic of the game. One thing also to look at, shout out to my man Matt Butler, has sent me this, because we're talking about the pace Xavier likes to play with. Out of 369 D1 teams, according to Ken Palm, adjusted for opponent, Xavier ranks 33rd in pace. So they like to get up. They like to get up and down the court. Texas is 100th.
Yeah.
Right? 100th in pace. Texas is 50. This is why I think Texas overall does have the advantage, though. Because you're right. Xavier, offensively, they are scary.
Yes.
If you just watch them offensively,
yes.
You get anxiety.
Sean Miller.
Yeah. No, watch them. You do get a little anxiety because they are really prolific offensively. They can score, man. They really can. And Texas, offensively, it's not bad at all. Texas is 15th offensively.
Right.
We talked about this. And you go look at it, Xavier, you look at offense rating, they're seventh. And they're top 10 offense.
Yep.
Xavier's defensive rating, 64th.
Not very good.
Texas' defensive rating is 10th. So Texas is a top 15 team defensively and offensively. Xavier's just a top 10 team offensively.
No defense.
So the real matchup advantage for Texas is going to be their offense. They're very adaptable offense now. And with the multi-headed Hydra, right? Essentially, they got so many different ways they can beat you. We know for a while about Marcus Carr and Sergio Boye Rice, but recently Dylan Dessou has come on, and we know Timmy Allen can also be a guy that can hurt you. So the offense is really adaptable, and I think their offense, going back to how Xavier doesn't really match up well with centers, they have a problem with centers, and Texas center right now, although undersized, is playing offensively, like one of the best centers in the country. And also, another thing that gives Xavier a lot of trouble is the mid-range game.
Right.
And Texas loves the mid-range game.
Do they ever?
I mean, Timmy Allen lives in the mid-range. That push shot, the flotation station, whatever it is from Dylan Dessou, is one of the most unorthodox yet effective mid-range shots in the country.
Yep.
It is arguably the best and most effective signature shot in the country. At this point.
Right.
And it's been using it, honestly, for about, 3 weeks now or something like that? He hadn't been using it that long.
I think that's when it exploded on the scene. He did a couple early in the year, but we didn't know what it was.
I guess we were. Yeah,
I remember because during the interview, he was like, do it again. Do it again. He was like, man, I guess he can really shoot that ball.
I can't wait till one of these advanced analytics companies actually looks at every push shot, flotation, whatever it is. And I want to see what the field goal percentage is on it. Because I tell you, it's got to be in the upper 80s.
Yeah.
Because he's already shooting damn near close to 70% anyway.
Yeah.
In the mid-range, it's got to be in the upper 80s.
And that was after he missed his three-pointer early in the game. And then he said, you know what? I'm just going to go to work in the middle of the field. I mean, in the middle of the court.
Yeah.
No, there you go, talking about 75-yard runs.
I got you. If you're looking at basically his mid-range shots inside the three-point line, all right, just kind of off the right side there, off the right elbow, he's shooting close to 65%. At the rim, he's shooting 79%.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that push shot probably has him close to 80%.
Get to the rim.
But he doesn't.
But that's what I'm
saying. That's what makes the shot so damn effective. Uh-huh. Is that the high pick and roll, all the defenders, and Zay broke this down beautifully on Chad and Zay earlier this week. I forget what day he actually broke it down. But usually you are, as a defender, you are taught, get to the rim, cut him off. Big man's going to the rim. He's going to the rim, he wants to dunk, or he wants to get to the paint.
Right.
Dylan Dessou stops short. Ooh, I stopped short. He stopped short of the paint. And then he makes it. We talked about this day and age, right? The analytics, how they destroy concepts. Mm-hmm. They're concept killers. The mid-range game.
They make me overthink.
Exactly.
It
and it has in baseball, too, right? Yeah. What's down in baseball? Yeah, you're always talking about. Like,
they're hitting the ball the other way. You don't have a good average. You don't have all that stuff.
And the same thing about the mid-range game in the NBA and even the college game. Guys don't practice a mid-range shot anymore. They don't live there. Analytics tells them get to the rim or shoot the three-point shot. Those are the only shots that are worth your time.
Ruining kids' lives.
All right? But so defensively, they've adapted. They defend a three-point shot. This is the lowest three-point field goal percentage in, 15 years in the tournament so far. Because teams are really good at defending three-point shots.
Exactly.
Because everybody shoots a three-point shot.
That's the shot that everybody takes.
That's what I see every damn day. What they're not good at defending is mid-range game.
Yep.
All right? And Dylan Dessou lives there because once he comes off that high pick and roll, he stops short. And he makes it a push shot. He turns it into a mid-range shot when most pick and rolls are designed to get him to the rim, especially with a big man, designed to get him to the rim and get him in the paint. He stops short of the paint.
Right.
And there, the defender is heading to the paint. And then they basically, he's in no man's land. And how are you going to defend that?
I mean,
it's a weird, strange.
You think you're defending it, but you're really not.
So I don't know. Somebody's going to figure out a way to defend it. I mean, in this game.
I hope it's not this series.
I would love to see, at least tactically, a team try something different. Because nobody's been able to even, in my opinion, even adequately approach defending it.
Can it be just because the way he's playing is just the way that he's playing? Like, It could be. It may look like they're not, but they tried.
Because if you rush him, then he gets the foul. Because he's still a big man heading to the paint.
And he used to be a guard.
Yeah, it's a great point.
He used to be a guard.
That's a great point, too.
Yeah.
No, it is. It's a fascinating signature shot that he's developed. Shout out to my man at Corey Mose, who broke it down, who played that audio for you early this week. But, yeah, the mid-range game, because Texas has Dylan Dessou and Timmy Allen, Timmy Tourniquet, I do think that's another issue for Xavier. They have struggled with teams that shoot a lot of mid-range shots. For example, they gave up over 80 points in both of their games against Georgetown that attempted two-pointers at the fourth highest frequency in college basketball. They lost at Butler. Butler attempts two-point shots, jump shots, at the 24th highest frequency. Texas takes a lot of mid. Texas, I believe, is the 22nd. I believe they take mid-range jumpers at the 22nd highest frequency, like two-pointers. So Texas game right now, at least what they do well, it does fit. And in terms of the matchup, it's advantageous to them because that's something that Xavier has struggled with all season long, defending centers and defending the mid-range.
Yeah.
And Texas's center is really hot, and they're hot from the mid-range right now.
The hottest.
The hottest.
There it is.
Oh, yeah, as a matter of fact, if you look at – got this little stat from Synergy, give them credit. If you look at the most efficient offensive players through the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, Dylan Dessou is the most efficient player through the first weekend of the tournament. Now, this does not count last night's game, so this was prior to the Sweet 16 starting. But if you look at points per possession, he's at 1.45. His offensive efficiency among qualified scorers, those who have at least 30 possessions. So he is extremely efficient. By the way, Sergeant Roy Rice, he's fifth.
Yeah, he's in the mix, too.
He's at 1.20 points per possessions in terms of first weekend's most efficient scores.
You see any Xavier players on that thing?
There are not.
Hello.
There are not.
So you're saying we got a chance?
Yeah, Drew Timmy makes it.
Timmer.
He was number six.
He had 36 last night, by the way.
Yeah, Strother makes it number eight. Yeah, that was a great game.
It was an outstanding game, but not better than that K-State game.
Woo! Man, Marquise Noel.
It's okay, the truth.
I know we're talking Texas, but we just got to veer off the path.
No, we have to.
Marquise Noel throwing that alley-oop.
After he was acting like he was arguing.
They were arguing.
No, they weren't. It was a setup play.
I thought it was real.
No, it was a setup play because if you watch the video again, Kang is walking away from it.
But they said it was. They were really arguing.
They were looking at each other. They were arguing in the locker room
I'm going off the record. The record says they went on the record and said they were actually arguing. They said they were actually arguing.
He had also told people walking up the sideline, talk about watch this. You know what I'm saying? They already knew what was going to happen. Because just like anything else, you remember Patrick Mahomes looking on the sideline?
I do remember that.
And then all of a sudden they snap it to the running back?
No, it's...
Oh, we just made that up on the go. Come on, man.
Well, I know in football you ain't
finna be, and you ain't finna be arguing in the middle of a play coming up the court.
No, that don't happen.
Exactly.
But still, it was.
No, I get it.
It was fascinating.
It was great, and the fact it was another no look, and that's how that dude. He's having so much fun playing basketball.
He's fun to watch.
And DJ comes in. My son DJ comes in the house, and he's like, "He's doing it for us little guys. He's doing it for the little guys."
Okay.
And I was like, "But he thick." He big bone.
He thick with it.
Yeah.
What is it about K-State and little athletes?
Oh, him and Deuce.
Darren Sproles, Deuce Vaughn.
And now Marquise Noel.
Has any athletic program have better small athletes than K-State?
You know what it is? It's that purple kryptonite.
And yeah, where did Spud Webb go? Let's go.
Oh, that's great.
Where did Muggsy Bogues go to school?
Muggsy Bogues went to Wake Forest. And I believe that he went to NC State. I think Spud Webb went to NC State.
Okay.
That's what I believe. So.
Uh-oh. Go ahead, Jack. What you got?
Hold your mouth. Mouthpiece.
Oh, give it to me.
Nate Robinson and Isaiah Thomas both went to Washington.
Oh, that's good.
That's right.
I like that.
5'9" NBA players.
Yeah.
Well done. That's research.
Yep. There he is.
Research. I like that. Well done there. Okay. Yeah, but I will say this. Jerome Tang, he said – it wasn't a dummy call or a fake out. Tang was calling one thing and Noel was calling something else.
Mm-hmm.
He said Noel noticed Johnson off the corner of his eye and then threw the alley-hoop. So Tang says it was not,
and
it was
I
not a rehearsed play.
Because he's a man of the cloth.
He said it was not a rehearsed play. He said now they were legitimately arguing because he was calling something, and that dude, Noel, was calling something else. He's like, and Noel was like, hold up for a second.
Yeah. Now, what you say?
What'd you say?
Yeah.
You know what? You got this.
So he did go, Spud Webb did go to NC State, but okay. He went to Midland College. He went to a JUCO first.
Any other small athletes went to NC State? I guess Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson went there, but he ain't 5'6".
But he's the shortest quarterback to ever win the Super Bowl.
He is definitely.
Boom. That. So there you go.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Until Kyler Murray does it. Yeah, we know that.
Never lost.
Bryce Young will win the Super Bowl before Kyler Murray does. There,
yeah, I
if
would definitely
does.
Say that.
I'm hoping, especially because I'm a Texans fan.
There you go.
All right, I was watching one of my favorite comfort shows. You have a comfort show?
Martin.
Yeah.
That's like, it.
A show you've seen every episode of.
Yeah, Martin Lawrence.
And you'll still watch
the
it.
The Martin
all the
show,
time.
I'll watch it as
Martin,
well.
I love Martin.
And
damn, Gene.
And Sanford and Son.
Sanford and Son is a good comfort show.
Yep.
Yeah, I like that. Good comfort show. My comfort shows are probably Seinfeld and The Office are probably my two.
I definitely
shows.
Yeah, you do quote
I watch
Seinfeld.
A lot. I
you,
watch a
you
lot
and Patrick.
Of The Office. Yes.
Didn't y'all go to a Seinfeld
trivia night? We did. We are sick.
Did y'all win? That's the question.
Patrick, what did y'all finish? Third?
Fourth place.
Fourth place.
Out of 20. Okay.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
That's
you're
pretty
in a,
good.
You're in the upper quandary. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I was watching one of my favorite comfort shows, Seinfeld, last night. And I think now I have a new theory on what's happened with the Dallas Cowboys this offseason.
Oh, my goodness.
It is Seinfeldian.
Is this straight Costanza style?
I'll reveal. It is Costanza style.
I figured as much.
We'll discuss it on the other side right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9 The Horn.
This episode is brought to you by Funnables. Funnables aren't just fruit snacks. Every bite your child takes is fuel to spark their imagination, taking them from a wild unicorn space mission to a deep sea dive into a rainbow river. Funnables are made with 7.1% real fruit puree and are an excellent source of vitamins A, C, and E. So anytime, anyplace, make snack time playtime with Funnables fruit snacks. Have fun. Eat it too. Visit FunnablesSnacks.com to shop now.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real!
My God! Okay, it's happening! Everybody stay calm!
No, oh, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn. We are looking live, hanging out here at Golffinity. If you're in the neighborhood, come on out and join us. It is a great spot, especially if you want to just cultivate your golf game, or if you just want to come hang out and watch a little Dell match play. I'm sure when the tournament comes on, it's going to be some tournament games out here. They got a full bar. It is a fantastic spot. Golffinity, North 620, right after that Bush's Chicken. You're going to turn that first right, or you can turn into Bush's Chicken, get yourself some chicken, but you can navigate your way to Golffinity from here. You cannot miss the horn flags out front, but also the huge venue that is Golffinity. You cannot miss it. All right. Let's get into my take on the Cowboys here. So I'm watching one of my comfort shows last night. I'm watching some Seinfeld, and it's one of the most popular episodes in Seinfeldian history. And I'll just get into the clip here because I got a little piece of audio, and I'm sure if you're a Seinfeld fan, you already know this audio. But I was watching it, and I started thinking about the Cowboys. And started thinking about, you know, the Cowboys offseason, which – even a Cowboys fan like Harge, all these Cowboys fans that I've known for years, I've studied the Cowboys for years. This is a very surprising and shocking offseason. It's very uncharacteristic of the Dallas Cowboys. They're just doing a lot of things that they normally don't do. And by the way, they're good decisions that are helping out the Dallas Cowboys. And they've had, up until this point, one of the best offseasons in the NFL. And it may be the best offseason in the NFL, depending on who you talk to and who's making that claim. So this theory, all right, because we were trying to figure out, like, what's going on here. At first, I was joking that, hey, man, it's like a weekend at Jerry's. Instead of weekend at Bernie's, they're trotting Jerry around making these off-season moves, and Jerry's no longer calling the shots. Obviously, that's in jest. I hope Jerry is okay and Jerry's fine. But this theory is still in jest, but a little bit more serious than my weekend at Jerry's theory. this is basically an episode of Seinfeld where George figured out that every decision that he had made up until that point was the wrong decision. So he decides to adopt the philosophy of doing and making the opposite decision of any decision that he had made up until that point. Here is the clip from Seinfeld where they finally figure out and pinpoint exactly what George's new ideology is going to be.
Yeah, I should do the opposite. I should.
If every instinct you have is wrong, then the opposite would have to be right.
Yes, I will do the opposite. I used to sit here and do nothing and regret it for the rest of the day. So now I will do the opposite and I will do something.
I present the theory that Jerry Jones has decided to do the opposite. They usually have an off season, not a lot of buzz, all right? Homegrown talent waiting in deep into the off season, late into free agency to make some moves. Not what the Cowboys did this year. They did the opposite. They're making moves early in free agency, signing their own guys, but also active in the trade market. Cowboys never do that. So this is a buzz-filled offseason for the Dallas Cowboys. And the Cowboys, honestly, have been used to quiet offseasons, almost a little too quiet. Crickets sometimes from the Dallas Cowboys. Let's go to some other examples of the Cowboys doing the opposite. I've told you guys for years, Cowboys do not value safety. They don't. All right, they, for some reason, they figure they can get a bargain at safety. And you know what? They're not wrong about that. They can find themselves a great bargain at safety. They've been doing it for years. The Cowboys are one of eight teams who have never picked, since 2013, have not picked a safety, at least one safety in the first or the second round since 2013. Wow. Since 2002, Cowboys have only spent one pick in the top 125 picks of any draft on a safety. And we know they definitely, Cat Boy, don't spend a lot of money, all right, on salary cap capital on the safety position. Well, that has changed. They signed Donovan Wilson to a big deal, making him one of the higher paid safeties. We know they already have Jayron Kearse and already have Malik Hooker under contract for next year. The Cowboys, who never really invest in safety, is one of the positions they want to get a discount on. They want to save. They want to be a super saver at the safety position. Not really doing that right now. On the opposite, they're spending money at the safety position because they play more safeties than anybody in the league. They play more three safeties than anybody else in the league. And argument can be made, they have the best safety core in the league. The opposite.
Yep.
The Dallas Cowboys last season traded Amari Cooper. We're talking about a number one wide receiver. We're talking about a wide receiver that was in his prime. They traded a number one wide receiver for a fifth round pick in a time where inflation had hit the wide receiver market like nobody's business, like never before. Right? We had never seen inflation at the wide receiver position like that. You had guys like Devontae Adams, 29 years old, traded for a first and a second round pick. Tyreek Hill, 28 years old, traded for five picks, including a first and a second. Hell, you had Marquise Brown was traded for a first and a third. He's 24 years old. A.J. Brown was traded for a first and a third. Amari Cooper, 27 years old, traded for a fifth. One of these things is not like the other. But this time, they get a wide receiver one, potentially, and Brandon Cooks, who's a Texas wide receiver one. They get that guy for a fifth and a sixth round pick. Last year, they misread the market so bad. They were the laughing stock of the league and their own fan base.
I was going to say, yep.
This time, they actually dictated the market of the wide receivers because it was reported, and I remember I told you guys this the other day, it was reported that DeAndre Hopkins, that his trade price, his trade value is probably closer to being Brandon Cook's trade value, a fifth and a sixth, rather than a second. So the Cowboys are now, they're the ones dictating the wide receiver market when last year they got bamboozled and hustled by the wide receiver market and totally miscalculated and misread the wide receiver market. The opposite. It's the opposite.
George Costanza.
It really is. Like I said, it goes on and on, right? Remember, we talked, and Patrick brought up this point during the Rams Super Bowl run, cash over cap. Essentially, cash over cap is you restructure deals and front load them with bonuses. So I'll pay you all this contract, or at least most of this salary in a bonus, or I'll make it in a kind of a cash-based compensation so that I can pay you all up front, and then that gives me more room on the salary cap. Makes you cheaper.
Yep.
Makes you basically a cheaper player overall in terms of salary, but also you become a bargain in terms of your salary cap hit. They did that with Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks, basically his $18 million salary. Remember, the Texans were going to pay $6 million of that, and he had $12 million left on his salary for the Cowboys. They turned $8 million of that into cash, essentially their version of cash over cap, and now his salary is going to be just $4 million, and he's only going to count $6 million against the cap.
Yep.
And remember, Jerry Jones – famously, this guy, they want longer contracts with players because he falls in love with players. They want longer contracts with players. And honestly, they're trying to backload a lot of these things where they can have the ability to restructure those contracts. They can almost hide money in contracts and then restructure them later, gain cap space. Now, they're going cash over cap. Guys, this is what teams that are going all in do.
Yep.
You don't go cash over cap if you like the middle. Like Jerry, I love the middle.
Yeah.
We prefer to be in the middle. No, they don't prefer to be in the middle. Also, something to consider, remember the Cowboys the last couple of years have been top five in the NFL in terms of money spent on the offense, salary cap money spent on the offensive side of the ball, meaning the percentage of their money, of their salary cap dollars spent on offense instead of the other two phases of the game. They were, some would say overspending on offense. This is the way they operated, though. But you could argue a shift is happening, and it's going to happen regardless. I mean, it's inevitable.
Yep.
That they're going to be not overspending on defense, but spending way more on defense than offense because Micah's going to be over there. Micah's going to be the highest paid defensive player in the NFL, in the history of the NFL. Trevon Diggs is going to be the highest paid corner in the history of the NFL. And now you're bringing in defensive pieces, right? You're trading for guys like Stephon Gilmore. By the way, getting him cheap. That's great, by the way. But they're re-signing LVE, all right? They're re-signing Donovan Wilson. Seems like the Cowboys now shifting more of their focus the opposite, all right? Instead of being overly invested on offense, sounds like now they may decide, you know what, we're going to invest on defense because we're unique and extraordinary and elite on defense.
Yep.
At multiple positions. Where are you elite, extraordinary on offense? Thank you.
I was going to say, I'll wait.
Yeah, Zach Martin.
Zach Martin is elite. He's the top 100 player.
He's the only one.
I think Tyler Smith, believe it or not, he could get there, but he ain't there yet.
Yep. I love CeeDee Lamb, but he ain't there yet. John's an elite extraordinary. I'm talking about top five at their position in the league. So
I can see y'all on the specs text line talking about y'all ain't mentioned Dak.
There are two we did not. And I love that, by the way. There are two primary ways to win the Super Bowl: elite quarterback play or elite defense / pass rush. The Cowboys are closer to being a Super Bowl competitor, a Super Bowl champion, with the recipe as an elite extraordinary defense / pass rush than they are with an elite quarterback. And I think now they're starting to see that. The opposite. That you should be doubling down on making the defense your game-changing identity rather than so much of the offense. Yeah, you got to score points. But as Mike McCarthy just said earlier this year, hey, we ain't interested in scoring points. We want to win games.
We want to win games.
That's basically what he said. He basically said that Kellen Moore is too worried about scoring points and not enough about winning games. I know. Trust me. You could argue that's
I can't wait until this year.
Yeah. As I say, you could argue that that's a bit of idiocracy, but still. My point being, the Cowboys are trying to do the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
More and more, you're seeing them go with the George Costanza philosophy, do the opposite. If every urge and every decision that you make is wrong, then the opposite must be right. I think Jerry Jones has been watching Seinfeld. And you know what? I support it. It worked for George. He got a job with the Yankees. All right, and ended up being
– I thought this was going to be the one of him hiding under the desk.
That's a different one. But I was with the Yankees, though.
Yeah, it was with the Yankees. All horrific
like that. Hey, man, you can do what you want to do. All right, there you go. A little Cowboys conversation. We come back. We'll get into another off the record here, right here. Don't Lie Live from Golffinity on 104.9 The Horn.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn, 512 Friday edition of Ball Don't Lie. We play jams from local bands and artists, very talented human beings that you can catch live right here in the ATX. Who are we jamming right now, Patrick?
This is The Answers, and they are playing Sunday at Hotel Vegas.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Hotel Vegas. I know what that is. All right, we don't have a ton of time here. So we'll next segment, though, we'll give you some updates, first of all, because I know tournament games have started up. So we'll give some updates on March Madness, and we'll also get into some Texas conversation about Texas Xavier, because tonight that is the big matchup. And Texas baseball, remember, Texas baseball tonight start up conference play right here in the ARN family, because basketball game will be on 104.9 The Horn. But we'll give you some details about how you can catch Texas baseball as well on the other side, and also get back to some NFL news, notes, and nuggets. We'll get to the Zeke story, because there is now deferring reports about how much interest there is in Zeke. We'll also get to some other Cowboys-related stories, too, and the Bama Pro Day. A lot of discussion about, or at least a lot of criticism, I should say, toward the Texans, who have not, this GM, Nick Caserio, and D'Amico Ryans have not shown up at these pro days for Bama and for Ohio State, looking at the two top quarterbacks. So we'll get into why that may be the case, because Nick Caserio has briefly discussed why he does not attend pro days, or really doesn't value pro days. But we'll get deeper into it coming up on the other side. All right, so we're out here at Golffinity. If you want to know where it is, it's North 620. It's a great spot. We'll be out here till 7 o'clock. They're out here celebrating Dale Match Play, of course. They got a Dale Match Play menu with food, cocktails, really great party happening out here for Dale Match Play, getting ready for a fantastic weekend. The best way to get that weekend started is to do it out here at Golffinity. We'll be out here till 7. Come on out here and join us if you're in the neighborhood. We come back, we'll get into all the sports stories from the day, including updates on the NCAA tournament. All that and more right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9 The Horn.